Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 90 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me. I see a Cold Coffee over there grabbing one of those award-winning people. Did you just shoot yourself in the face with
a PBR? I just got jizzed in the face.
That's a hell of a way to start episode number 90 and a half. We are back in the room here. Well, I say the room. We roll two rooms. We're grown men. We need separate rooms.
Yeah.
We're back in my room right now at the Hotel Motel Holiday Inn that has served as the host all week long for UFC on Fox 22, Van Zant versus Watterson here in Sacramento, California. And listen, man, we said it going in that I thought at the end of the day we were going to get a fun fight card. And I tell you what, at the end of the day, I think we got a fun fight card.
Yeah, we sure did. Crowd seemed into it. Fighters were into it. Good fights. It was good. It was good.
West Coast Fox shows are the best. The West Coast Fox shows end at around 7 p.m., which is awesome, man. We were out of the – well, we weren't out of the arena. It took us a while to get out of the arena. But it's not 6 o'clock in the morning as we sit here. We had a chance to sneak out, get a couple of cocktails in us, maybe have a little dinner, and then come back and do the road show. So just loved everything about the evening. I will say this. The new arena is gorgeous, man. The Golden One Center, as it's called. It's right here downtown, which is awesome. I mean, the location of it's phenomenal. The venue itself is cool. Very friendly people, as we found out yesterday at the weigh-ins when we just snuck in through an open door.
Very trusting. Well, it wasn't like we like snuck in. It's not like I can imagine listeners are thinking like, oh, we creeped into a side door and we're crouching around. But no, I mean, the doors were wide open, so we were just walked in trying to find where the box office was, and nobody chose to stop us.
We walked with a purpose.
I mean, like, I had my tripod. I had my camera gear. They definitely probably thinking, like, oh, okay, they must be with the organization or something.
We definitely didn't make eye contact with anybody.
And that's right. Don't give them an option. Don't give them an opening.
But it's a beautiful venue, but I will say this. Sleep Train Arena, or as we knew it for a long time, Arco Center, I believe, was a lot louder. There was something about the acoustics of that building. It was famous as an NBA arena, as one of the loudest arenas, and it was amazing. It was one of the loudest venues I ever remember being in. And this new one, I don't think the volume traveled quite the same way. And I'm not sure you're more into like production and stuff than me. I don't know if you can design venues with that in mind, or if it just ends up being kind of a holy shit luck of the draw. The way this thing was built, it happens to be very loud. But the old building was, like, super loud.
Yeah, I'm sure they can, and depending on the materials that it's built, reflects sound better. So they probably built this one, you know, more in mind of if there's a concert or something going on, it maybe doesn't affect or resonate outside, and maybe, you know, just in a bowl or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it takes into account all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, because it's a fantastic facility. I mean, even going in the press rooms that they had set up, me as a geek or whatever, just the wiring hookups, the way they had it ran. So at the press room, you know, they had nice inputs that run back to the back so that if a truck's pulled in, if there's a broadcast, you could jack into the wall there. And then there's the wall outlets by where the trucks would pull in that you can feed lines to it. So, like, it's set up. It's set up really, really nicely. But, yeah, I could see where maybe – in the design, the way that the seats, because I liked the way that the seats were angled as well. It looked like there were a lot of really good seats there. So maybe the way that it was, it doesn't reflect the sound back down to the area where you would normally be seating. But who knows? Maybe up top where
sounds different.
You know, it might sound different. It might be loud up at the top. But beautiful, beautiful place and very technically advanced, as we'd seen some stuff. You know, USA Today did a video once, or there was some stuff highlighting the air control system, the AC system in there, and all this other high-tech stuff.
There was,
stuff,
like, vents underneath the seats and stuff.
Underneath the seats and stuff, so they can, you know, better climate control it and stuff. It's pretty fantastic what they're doing. So I'm sure the way that it sounds in there, everything was done by design, you know. So,
and I'm going to say, plenty of room for us to work in the press area, unlike, you know, T-Mobile Arena, where we have to set up in a tent outside in our billion-dollar home venue.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Now the Golden Knights will be coming there soon. Hopefully that will change, and we'll be ranting and raving how good it is at T-Mobile. But, yeah, right now it's a little lacking, you know, especially when you've seen something as nice as this. You're like, wow, this is what it can be like.
It's top notch.
This is what it can be like.
Top notch. So. All right, well, let's talk about the fights themselves. Michelle Waterson defeated Paige VanZant in the main event. Technical submission put Paige VanZant to sleep. I guess, you know, Paige got a lot of credit from people for going out like a warrior, going out on her shield. I don't know that fighters should feel like they have to go unconscious if they get trapped in that position, but I'm not going to lie. I have more respect for them when they do, when they don't tap. Yeah. So I have a lot of respect for Paige VanZant. But, man, can we just talk about Michelle Waterson? I picked Michelle Waterson in this fight, but I felt a little risky about it. You know, the layoff that she's had, the pace that Paige VanZant sets, the fact that really Michelle Waterson is an atom weight who's fighting up a division. I mean, I was concerned about a lot of these things, but I picked her anyway. I thought that kind of her experience would give her the edge here, and I did worry that maybe the distractions for Paige VanZant of being the headliner at home, you know, might ultimately play into it somehow. I don't know whether it did or not, because Michelle Waterson, the execution of that beautiful little head and arm throw that she had and the way she got to the back and just lashed herself on, God damn, just I can't say enough. That was, to me, an incredible performance by the Karate Hottie.
Yeah, and I have to thank Paige, the fact that it probably was at home, and the crowd is probably what gave her the strength to push through it a little bit. I mean, I thought she would have tapped a while. Mm-hmm. There was points where it looked locked in, you know, and then it didn't even look like she was attacking the hands to try to break free, and I'm thinking, like, oh, it's done. Then all of a sudden, she would just get this little burst of energy and grabbed a hand, released it, but then, you know, Michelle would lock it in again, you know, a different way or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think if it probably wasn't for it being a home crowd, I think she probably would have tapped out sooner, but I think it gave her some strength to try to muscle through it. Kudos to her. You're right. I mean, you know, nobody wants to see. I mean, it's fun, I guess, sometimes when you see somebody actually go out, then you're like, wow, they didn't tap, or that's how quick it can happen, you know, and you admire the skill of the person that's able to put the submission on. But, you know, it's, I don't know, there's something about, you know, little sweet Paige, you know, part of you is like, oh, man, you don't want to see her actually go out. But kudos to her for doing it. And it was funny because, I mean, she literally looked like, and it was weird, she looked like she went limp. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, like, she's out. But as soon as they tapped and they stopped it then, and Michelle lifted her arm up, she sat right up,
right,
just immediately there. So then I was like, all right, was she really out? You know, or finally got to the point where she was just like,
I'm stuck.
She was willing to go out.
Right.
But the ref saw that, recognized it, stopped it, just in the probably that hazy part where she's already saw the stars and it was darkening and all that other good stuff, you know. So I don't know, but kudos. I mean, Michelle looked amazing. I thought it was super, super impressive how good she was. And it's funny, I thought it would have been maybe a little bit closer. I thought Paige was going to be able to impose a little bit of her strength and push her up against the cage. And it was Michelle,
right,
that was actually pushing Paige up against the cage. Yep. And really forcing her will. So, man, she's tough, 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 man. But, yeah, Karate Hottie, she needs another nickname, though. We were talking in the back how we kind of feel like weird saying the Karate Hottie.
It is weird. Even when I just said it now, I was like, I can't believe that came out of my mouth.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know,
she's
that
hot. Oh, and she does karate, so I get the Karate Hottie thing, but I'm wondering if she ever wants to revisit that and, like,
oh, I'm sure.
All right, now
I'm
now I got the little kid, I got the whatever, and, you know, all of us feel like, I feel like a fucking perv every time I say, oh, the Karate Hottie. I'm just like,
I'm with you on that. I just, but, I literally just felt stupid for saying that. I'm like,
yeah,
I can't believe
it. We gotta push her to get another one, but whatever.
All right, so here's one thing, and it's easy to say this in retrospect or whatever, and it's kind of, I don't even know if it's a fair evaluation, because it seems like Paige is literally, like, always smiling and always happy. But I will say, all the face-offs that they had this week and the open workouts where they both kind of, like, were dancing and having fun, mm-hmm, and then they did that little, you know, at the ceremonial weigh-ins, they did, like, the little dance battle or whatever. I thought it was all kind of a little bit weird. I mean, not that every fight has to be, like, blood sport, you know what,
right,
I mean? I think it's cool. But I will say, I feel like tonight when we saw Michelle Waterson enter the cage, she was business, man. She was focused. Like, all that fun and games and smiling and laughing and, hey, we're all just here to have a fun time, That was over. And I feel like Paige was still kind of like smiling. Look at me. I'm in, you know, I'm in Sacramento, and
yeah.
Welcome to my house. It's the Golden One Center. I'm a, you know,
I was like, is that how that song goes?
I think so. I think that's how it goes. No, but I almost think it's unfair because again, I feel like Paige has always got that smile on her face, but I don't know, man. There was something that I feel like Michelle Waterson kicked it into a gear tonight that maybe Paige didn't kick it in. I mean, did you pick up on that at all as the fight was kind of starting?
I guess I could see that, but I think that's probably something that she's even been saying throughout the week, that she thought her overall technique and that she was more skilled, more advanced, more experienced than Paige, that would
yeah.
bring her the victory, and maybe that was just going to a show, but also too, I mean, I think she's just had a lot more life experience than Paige as well, so I think she can
true.
Take the humor and can take the fun. But I mean, she's a mother. She's dealt with injury. She's dealt with time off where she's really now, she's trying to make a run back at it. She's had a lot of time taken away from fighting that now she can have fun and do the things, you know, like during the week when it's all fun and games, it's all about show. It's all media events during the week. I mean, none of that really is doing anything to play up for the fight. So I think most fighters can get with the program. They know it's about the fans. Let's go out and do it. So I think Michelle, what's great about her is that she'll play to the fans. She'll do whatever. But she also, I think, yeah, can just switch it on and go to business mode, because I think she's had a lot more life, I think, life experiences to where she can keep it in context maybe a little better. Not that Paige doesn't take it serious when she does it, when she got in there. But you're right. I think being a host, and we've seen this when other people have been from the locale where the event is. You know, Fabricio, he couldn't stop goofing around when
right,
he was down there. You know, and a lot of people say that maybe was why he lost the belt, that he wasn't fully there. It's an immense amount of pressure to be that home person, you know, trying to play to the crowd. You want to keep them happy. And even in the presser, she ended by saying, you know, that how she was just happy to be able to perform in front of the Sacramento crowd, you know. So that was something that really was weighing on her mind. So maybe it was a little bit slower for her to switch into that mode because she was still feeling like, I have to keep the fans entertained, so let me do whatever. But I still think she definitely was taking it as serious. Maybe
sure.
Maybe she just didn't show it as much or look as much. But yeah, I mean, Michelle, I mean, she's when she's focused and she's locked in there, man, she is incredible, incredible.
She's
stuff.
Fantastic. Well, I will say, I do want to touch on Paige VanZant real quick because
you want to touch Paige VanZant?
Oh my God, you already made me feel like a perv for saying the karate hottie.
Now you said karate
that.
Hottie, and now you're talking about touching on Paige.
All right, podcast is over.
Yay!
No, listen. All the respect in the world to Paige VanZant to show up to the press conference again, second time. I mean, it's a different situation than last time when she lost, because last time when she lost, she just got dominated, like, from bell to bell. You know what I mean? Like, it was a long, you know, extenuated beatdown, so to speak, and she still showed up. Tonight, I don't want to say that it – I mean, it was kind of a – I know it was a submission, but it was kind of one of those she got caught. You know what I mean? Like, she just got in a bad position very early on, and she got caught. So – you know, less physically taxing and mentally taxing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it was obvious that she was fighting back tears as she was talking to us. And kudos to her for doing it. And her attitude was awesome. You know,
yeah.
Her attitude, her will is so strong that she's just like,
yeah.
Because, you know, I asked her some questions like, hey, do you feel like maybe it's time to take a step back? Maybe you've been rushed a little bit. And she's like, hell no. I belong in the spotlight. I'm meant for this sport.
Yep.
I'm going to be there. And I thought her attitude was phenomenal.
Yeah, and you're right. And I thought just even in seeing that growth, you know, she told the stories. Like, she was very, very open the last time. And I think in part of telling that story, she got emotional.
Mm-hmm.
We actually saw some tears on, you know, up there while she's speaking. This time, she mentioned the sort of same thing as well. But then she kind of lighthearted, said how she got her emotions in the back, didn't want to cry up there, whatever. And we didn't see it. I thought there was a moment where her voice got a little thick,
mm-hmm.
and whatever, but there weren't the tears. There wasn't the thing. So, I mean, she's already grown from the past and dealing with a loss, dealing with, you know, adverse things, and she's dealing with it better already. So right there, I was like, oh, wow, she's already, not that she hasn't grown, but time, you could tell the experience. She's now chalking up these life experiences of some of these things that it's just going to make keep making her a stronger person. But that was one of the things I noticed. I was like, I was wondering if it was going to affect her, because this, even more so than the other, I mean, headlining the card, you know, in the hometown or the locale where she chooses
her
to be
adopted
home.
Hometown.
Yeah. This could have been that moment where it happened again, but she took it like a champ, you know. I mean, she took her bumps and bruises and went out there and said the right things, and I thought it was good. I mean, I thought
it
was good.
She's 22, bro.
Yeah, she's got a
lot. 22, man. She's going to be around.
Yeah, she's
dude.
Got a lot more great things coming, so.
She really does. All right, so Michelle Waterson, interesting. You know, she has such a long layoff that the division kind of moved forward quite a bit while she was gone, and things have kind of started to sort themselves out a little bit. In the MMA Junkie USA Today rankings, we had her listed as an honorable mention coming into this week. She'll definitely break into the top 15, I believe, with the win. Mr. George Garcia, gorgeous George, heads up those rankings. But I got to believe that she'll be moving in. But a couple – not that I want to take away from the young Mike Bond and all the great things that he does in filling Joe Silva's shoes and – you know, doing all the matchmaking pieces, but a couple of names out there that I think would be fun for her are either Joanne Calderwood, who's coming off a loss, so maybe not as attractive as an opponent, but I think it still makes some sense stylistically, and I think, honestly, within the UFC fan base, Joanne might still have the bigger name. Like, she's kind of been a little bit more active than she has, or maybe Marina Moros. I think stylistically that could be a fun fight as well. There's a couple other people that already kind of matched up. Maybe, you know, maybe timing's not right, but I don't know. I think both those fights sound a lot of fun stylistically for me.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's get her in there again soon.
Let's get it booked. I think she wants to fight again soon. We talked to her briefly at the new style post-fight press conference, the way things are done now. One-on-one, we're not putting a full dais up there anymore. I like it. I know some people
it's
don't.
It's not bad. Yeah, it's like good it. Once it gets rolling, once it gets going. But then you have something like happened today where Uriah, they probably could have maybe saved him a little bit or something, because they should have known that he was going to run long. Yeah, he went 22 minutes. So, you know, at that point, everybody was queued up waiting at that point. You know, I mean, maybe Michelle was finishing off some sort of
Fox duties
or something, you know, but for the most part, everybody was queued up waiting, and that's the only thing that probably sucks for them, where they're like, well, I still got two dudes ahead of me, and they're still in there fucking talking to Uriah. But I think they do a good job usually of cutting that off, but I think they allowed it because they knew this was, or possibly the last time.
I don't know if you, did you pick up, like, after Uriah left, like, a bunch of the media left, too.
Yeah, sure did.
They were like,
we had two different camera guys that were up on the riser behind us, local news guys, leave. And this was before the main event even
came to the press conference.
So, yeah, it was
they got what they needed.
Yeah.
They got what they needed. All right, well, we're going to refreshen up these frosty beverages right here. And while we do that, listen to a couple of quick minutes with your main event winner, Michelle, insert new nickname here, Waterson.
Hi.
Congratulations on obviously a very, very impressive win for you tonight. I want to ask first about the mindset. You know, you admitted earlier this week, as much fun as you were having and smiling, that you were actually very nervous. How did you feel as you were walking in? Because it looked like you were kind of all business.
Yeah, you know, I had to stay focused. I had to stay concentrated, and I just had to be in the present moment. I'm coming into her hometown. You know, the crowd was cheering like crazy, so I just had to stay focused on the task at hand.
She praised you, of course, said she needed to work on her jiu-jitsu. Did you think that the ground game and the jiu-jitsu would be where you would win this fight?
You know, we prepared for everything because she, you know, she's a very good fighter, and she's learning, and she gets better every fight. And so we wanted to make sure that we were prepared for every scenario. And so stand up, ground, against the cage, wherever the fight would have gone in the five rounds that we had, we made sure that we were prepared for it.
You lost a lot of valuable time, of course, with the layoff. So what now? I mean, do you feel like you need to make up for that and fight more frequently, or do you want to kind of take things slow? What do you think the right plan is for you?
Whatever the UFC has planned for me, I'm in great condition. I feel amazing. you know, the year and a half really allowed me to become comfortable in my skin and know who I am as a fighter and know that this is where I belong. And I don't need to force anything.
You mentioned it in your post-fight comments about that green comment, which, mm-hmm. which like really started to take off. Was that yeah. were you not happy with the way that I guess that comment took off?
Yeah, you know, because I'm not one to disrespect any fighters, but I am also trying to be more outspoken and honest with myself when I answer questions. And so I didn't mean it as a disrespect. I meant it just as an honest answer coming from somebody that's been doing martial arts for 20 years, fighting professionally for 10 years, and I know that she just hasn't.
And you said you didn't want to force anything, but I would think that, you know, you looked so good tonight and it seems like, you know, you're in the zone. I mean, you would want to fight again very soon. I mean, saying that doesn't exist at all for you, or it does?
It's whatever they give to me. I'm fresh, and so I'm ready to get back in there.
Is there any particular matchup that you think makes sense for you coming off of this win?
No, you know, I'm just going to enjoy it, enjoy the victory, enjoy my family, enjoy the holidays, and, you know, get back in the gym. I have other teammates that are getting ready for fights, so I want to be there for them because they were there for me for this whole year and a half as I was trying to prepare.
Maybe I missed this a little bit earlier, but did she meet with your expectations as far as what she actually showed in the cage? When you said, you know, she's green, she doesn't have the experience, but what was she like in the cage? Was she less tough than you thought, or did she meet your expectations?
I think that me switching to southpaw really threw her off guard. And she kind of, I think she looked at me and was like, hold up, that's not what we were getting ready for. And so it just kind of screwed with her head. And and that was our game plan from the beginning. It was to just, you know, stop her momentum. And being able, and going southpaw did exactly that.
Was getting to her back part of the game plan too? Did you think she was weak there with... Mm-hmm. with her defense?
No, you know, she's a great scrambler. She's showed it in all her fights that she can scramble out of submissions. So we really worked hard on our jiu-jitsu chain submissions with Coach Barata and just making sure not to get frustrated through her scrambles. And when she scrambles out of it, either getting a better position or scrambling into a new submission. And then if none of those worked, getting back up, like not wasting any time just in the neutral position.
And did you feel her go unconscious?
I did not. But, you know, that's how you know she's a fighter, because she wasn't going to tap.
Does that give you a little bit more, like, respect for her, or that she didn't?
I've always had respect for her, you know. Like, anybody that steps into the cage and you know that they're getting ready to throw down with you, you need to have respect for.
You're going to see Master Yaya again?
Master Yaya said, let her dance a little bit, and then finish. So I listened.
All right. Meanwhile, the co-main event, a couple of prospects met there and turned out to be pretty damn entertaining. Mickey Gall picking up the second round submission over Sage Northcutt. Cole Coffey, I don't know about you, but this fight, you know, we talked about it going in, all the question marks. And I did pick Sage Northcutt, and I kind of knew in the back of my head that Mickey Gall was probably the safer play, you know, with his big advantage in the ground game. I thought that was probably the smart one. But, you know, I was looking for a little edge. I thought Sage Northcutt's experience might have it. I thought the fact that, you know, this was kind of his first full-time training camp or what have you. I thought Sage might be it. Looked ugly early, man. Mickey Gall took this fight to the ground with just zero problems whatsoever. But I thought Sage showed a little bit of a bit of durability, you know, fighting back. And then, man, that second round started, and Sage came out striking. Man, he was looking good. Hell, he was talking a little bit of trash. There was all kinds of crazy stuff going on in there. You know, he busted open Mickey Gall, but ultimately, Mickey did get the fight to the floor again, got on the back, and got the submission win. But I tell you what. You know, I don't want to say that, like, because I see some people saying Sage doesn't even belong in the UFC. I do feel like he belongs in the UFC. I mean, there's nothing that I've ever seen about him that made me think, man, this guy is future champion, future Hall of Famer, or whatever. But dude, he's fun to watch. He's one of the most interesting dudes you'll ever meet. And I don't know, man. I walked away from this fight feeling good about both guys.
Yeah, for sure. I, on the other hand, did pick Gall to win. Just throwing that out there.
I didn't see your picks anywhere.
Oh, okay. Well, I did. I think I even said so in our
you
episode.
You did. I'm just joking. I'm just busting your balls because I think that in the 2017 picks, our staff picks on MMA Junkie,
I believe
Cole Coffey should be on there.
I should get in there. Even if I pull the lower ranks, I should get in there.
I think you should be on there.
I should. But regardless, jumping back to this, I thought it was great. I mean, what really stands out in my head, even though, like you said, you know, he took it down easy, but I think that's just the fact that Gall's got some slick little things. You know, when he was able to grab it, you know, he's working the trips really well, and I think he was controlling when he got the hold of the leg. I mean, same thing when Derek the Black Beast throws that leg up there and somebody grabs a hold of it. You get that chance to just take him down, you know, even though you're like, why are you doing that? But what I loved and I thought was awesome was when you started seeing these two go starting to jaw at each other. And in the second round, Sage came out and was jawing more, but had this swagger and they had this movement that I don't remember him doing before. Like, you could tell they were really having fun. Almost like I thought he was going to start doing some capoeira shit or something.
Yeah.
And he started just doing this swing, and I was like, holy cow.
Kind of switching stances and moving side to side.
I could tell he was having fun, and he was, like, smiling about it. And I was like – then I was starting to think, like – because in the beginning I was like, oh, all right, I was so right. Gall's going to get this. But then when I started seeing that out of Sage in the second, I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Now he's having fun, and you could see the weapons, and he was flowing really good. I was like, oh, shit. You know, he might catch Mickey now because he was just showing some, like, Bruce Lee type shit. You know, I was waiting for him to just start, you know, if you ever seen the movie The Last Dragon.
Sure.
You know, I thought he was going to start doing, like, the glow thing. You know, when you got that glow, or something like that, whatever that song is. But I was like, oh, shit. And then I started thinking, like, oh, he's going Super Saiyan because his hair seemed to be more highlighted at that point.
Yep.
But he definitely has a place in the fact that, one, he brings a lot of eyeballs to the sport, and two, the dude is talented. I mean, he's got sick striking. I know people want to say shit about his ground game and whatever. People said the same thing about Ronda, said that she was a one-trick pony until she started getting her hands and started doing some things with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, love him or hate him, I mean, one, he's probably one of the nicest, most polite people in the sport. That's
insane.
It's the kind of guy you want representing the sport. This is the kind of guy you could send out and he will convert, you know, a lot of non-believers and haters in the sport just because they're going to see this guy and think like, wow, if everybody in the sport is like this, I want my daughter to marry every one of them. You know, I mean, like, he's such a perfect spokesman for in that sense. And he's super talented. I mean, his physique is amazing. And he's got so many years left for him to keep growing. And he's already striking at such a high level that when everything else keeps going, I mean, give this kid another couple years of battles like this at the top level, he's going to be a monster. And
would you call him the Karate Hottie?
I'll do that right now. Let's just swap it. We'll call him the Karate Hottie.
She can be Super Michelle Watterson?
Michelle Super Watterson. Michelle Supermaster Yaya. I hope she doesn't go like Michelle Master Yaya. Master Yaya Watterson.
That was some uncomfortable shit. I'm not going to lie.
That was very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, all right. So, I think Sage Northcutt belongs in the UFC. I think he's entertaining, and I think he has some skill. And you're right, man, because it was funny. I thought right away, I'm like, Mickey Gall is going to smoke him. I'm like, I made the worst pick ever. Like, what was that? The hell was I thinking? And then he showed some character in the second. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I was right. Here we go. Yep. And then Mickey got it. So good stuff all the way around, man. These two guys could fight again somewhere down the future.
Well, I hope, too, that people now – I mean, because a lot of people were saying, and, you know, who's Mickey fought? You know, and a lot of people might even now still – just the haters are going to be like, oh, well, he's fought a guy at Sage. He was overhyped anyways. He's whatever. But when you see this kid, I mean, he wasn't afraid to stand and bang with Sage as well. He took some shots, but he also gave some shots. And, I mean, his submission game. I mean, when he finally got a hold of Sage and got on the ground, he's slick how he moves around. Super I mean, slick. Like, people got to get over the fact that now he's 3-0, but, like, this kid is – he's going to do something. I mean, I believe that if he keeps going this path and he's picking it how it is right now, in a couple years' time, I mean, or even, like, a year's time, I love how he said, like, if it goes lightweight, but he's humble enough and he's smart enough, you can kind of see almost the vision. He's like, give me 2 years. He's like, I'll own that division or whatever. He's not saying, I'm going to go down right now and take it over it or whatever. But he's talking the right things.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to see some really good things. And hopefully people now won't push as much doubt as they have been. Because it's going to be hard for them to say, well, he's just fought a journalist and he's fought a pro wrestler making his debut. But now he's fought a guy literally that has, you know, Taekwondo accolades or whatever out of the yin-yang. And all the other shit, karate or whatever. I'm not sure if it was what the exact discipline, but he's got somebody now, and he's going to get some more. And fuck, I would put him – I'd think he'd smoke Hardy if Hardy came out right now. Unfortunately. But, I mean, Hardy's been out of the game for a while. Hardy's a little long in the tooth,
yeah.
You know.
Not short in the tooth.
You know, so
Yeah, that's and that's not no, and that's not a swipe at Dan Hardy.
No, I mean, not at all.
I think we both like Dan Hardy as a person, like him as a fighter.
For
but
sure.
Dude, you don't walk in off you know years of layoff. I think he's nearing 5 years or whatever. I mean, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
And is it that long? It's
gonna be
4 years.
Been that long.
4 years, right?
Or
that's
like
gonna
three.
Piss me off.
Well, let's see, because I've been gone for. I remember when Lytle and Hardy fought.
No, I'm right. It was September 2012.
So, when Hardy last fought?
Yeah. So I say nearing 5 years. It's been 4 years and 3 months. So not nearing 5 years, but over 4 years. You don't walk in from that type of layoff and keep up with a young kid, you know, with that type of pace and that type of move. That would be tough.
Yeah,
but I will say that was kind of a weird call out because I don't even think Dan's even medically cleared right now.
Yeah,
he's still got the heart condition. There's still concerns, and I don't think he's medically cleared. So I thought that was kind of bizarre.
But props to him. I mean, kid's throwing out softballs, man. He's like, we'll see what happens. You know, here's one. Let me call a big name because I mean, that would be the biggest name to date, of course, that he's beaten outside of celebrity name, you know, and CM Punk. But well, fuck it. Doesn't hurt to ask, you know?
Doesn't hurt to ask. All right, let's hear from Mickey Gall, who, by the way, with all this other stuff we're saying, is pretty damn good on the mic as well for such a young kid.
What was he saying in there?
I'll tell you this first. I had been, you know, I wanted to play the bad guy a little bit for this. I was like, there's no way you'd be the nice guy with Sage. And, you know, I want to talk, maybe get him to engage in me a little bit. Maybe make him step out of his character and, you know, talk some crap maybe. And he didn't the whole time. I'm like, he's just such a sweet kid, and he's not going to do it. But it came out in the fight. And, you know, you saw the fight went down. And I think that helped me. And so what he said was, when he stood up out of my guard, he was like, get up, get up. And he was, like, standing right over me. I was like, why don't you come down? I thought your jiu-jitsu was better than mine, because he said that in the show. And then I got up. I was like, are you tired? He's like, I never get tired. I gotta say I like Sage with an edge. And then when he blacked my eye and he cut me, and he was like, "Ooh, that looks good." Like he was talking some crap. I like that. I like that he came out a little bit. This cut though, I lied to everyone. I cut this 3 weeks before the CM Punk fight. I got 21 stitches in this eye. I didn't want to tell anyone that, but and he opened it right back up. So. I only got 8 stitches now.
Talk about the call out of Dan Hardy, where that came from. You've kind of, you know, masterfully handled your career thus far. Where did that one come from?
I got to punch up. You know what I mean? I want to take out guys who have bigger names than me, who have a bit more star power. Big names make nice trophies, and I want some nice trophies, you know? So, you know, I called out CM Punk, called out Sage. I plan on going down to 155. Making 70 is pretty easy. 55 would be tough, but I think I'll be the champion there. I like the way, you know, Conor went down to 45 and suffered and went, you know, and made that. And he made himself a champion, made himself a star. You know, I think I can do the same thing. I think I'll be the champ at 55 in a couple years.
Mickey, can you talk about just the level of, I guess, satisfaction that you have tonight compared to maybe your first two UFC fights? Is it completely different? Is it comparable? What would you say?
I feel much better. You know, it was more of a fight. It wasn't a total domination. I got my eyes blackened. You know, Sage is a tough kid, and Sage is a UFC caliber guy. You know, he's a step up in competition. So yeah, I do feel like I accomplished something more.
I want you to kind of comment on something you just said, because it seems like already, you know, on social media, some people do think that Sage is not UFC caliber. You know, so to anybody who still thinks that, maybe, like, what would you say? Oh, Mickey hasn't beaten a UFC caliber guy yet.
That's cool. You know, he was 3-1 in the UFC. But I can't be concerned with other people's opinions. If they think that, that's cool. And then when I win the next one against another UFC caliber guy, then we'll see what they're saying then. You know, that's cool. I'm excited to prove people wrong and, you know, show what I'm about, show what I can do.
Yep. I kind of want to follow up on the whole Hardy thing. Do you know something we don't as far as his condition and if he's cleared to fight? Are you just going based on the fact that he said he wants to come back, or do you have any more intel than that?
I did some Googling, and he said he wants to come back. He said he wants a marquee fight. I think he'd look at me and think, oh, that's a nice fight for me. I think maybe he'll take that bait. But for real, I'm a big fan of his, and it'd be an honor to fight him. I'd love that, and he's a bigger UFC star than me. So I just, like I said, big names make nice trophies. I'm gonna keep punching up. I'm not gonna call out some guy that no one knows. You know what I mean? I gotta say big names. I'm tossing up a Hail Mary. Again, like I did with the CM Punk. If it doesn't happen, that's okay. If it does, that'd be great. I'd love that. I'd love to see him back. I'd love to see Dan Hardy come back and fight anyone. I'd definitely like to see him fight me.
He didn't tag you on this, but I think he might have been referring to you.
I heard.
Oh, was he old enough to watch the UFC when I was still fighting?
Yeah, the first UFC I ever went to was him versus GSP for the title in Jersey. That was the first UFC I ever went to.
So you remember, that's a memory.
Yeah, I saw Dan Hardy fight a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other names that you're thinking about if you look at 155 or 170, just because there's a chance that Dan may not be able to get cleared? I know he's had problems getting cleared before, so, you know, because of the heart issue.
Yeah, I'd like to go down, you know. I feel, like I said, I like the way, I admire the way Connor did that, you know, suffer. And I want to be the best in a weight class. I think I'm a little young in the tooth, 70s steep. But I think, you know, like I said, 155, I'll have that belt in a couple of years. No names really, man, whoever. I got into this to be the best in the world. So whoever, whenever, whatever.
What do you think as far as like the 155 guys? I mean, it's not necessarily to fight, but just kind of like your evaluation of whether it's Conor or Ferguson or Khabib, you know, what do you think of those different guys?
They're fantastic. They're wonderful. They're awesome fighters. World class, some, you know, best in the world. I think they're all great. I'd be huge for that weight class. And, you know, I think I'd dominate in that weight class.
Any questions?
None, Randy?
Cool. Well, I guess to follow up on the 155,
sure.
You know, you said you were going to, you kind of meant, made it sound like it was going to be a difficult cut for you, that, you know, you watched Connor suffer down. It's going to be similar for you. I mean, how confident are you that you can even make it?
I think I can make it. I do. I just have a strict diet to make 70. I can make 70 standing on my head. It's 15 pounds. An ideal spot would be like a 60, 65. So, if the UFC doesn't seem to be too keen on doing catch weights, but I'd be extremely open to one. I'd love that. But yeah, I think I can make it. I can do it.
And then, of course, in our third fight from the top, to be honest, in a lot of ways felt like the main event. It was certainly the main event for the local media. Uriah Faber did pick up the unanimous decision win over Brad Pickett in what, at least for now, is the last fight of his career. The California kid says he's calling it quits. It felt like the prevailing mood in the press room tonight was that he's going to come back and fight again at some point. I believe that damn near everybody in there believes it. I could see him not coming back only because he does have a lot of other options on the table with businesses and things like that. And I don't think he's in need of money. You know, he said it. He's not set for life. He does have to continue to make money. But he has businesses that seem to be doing pretty well. And I don't think he has to fight to continue to support himself. And he wants to build a team or whatever. But at the same time, he showed it tonight. Brad Pickett, who, of course, may be on his way out as well, but is certainly an established veteran, is certainly a dangerous fighter on the other side of the cage. And Uriah looked phenomenal, damn near finished him in the first round. And, you know, I don't know that I would pick Uriah against Dominick Cruz right now. I don't know that if for some reason Uriah and Cody Garbrandt weren't teammates, that, you know, if they had to fight each other in this video game world or whatever, that I would pick him against Cody Garbrandt. You know, I don't know that. But, I mean, dude, at worst, you know, Uriah's still at this stage in his career like a top 10 guy at worst.
Sure.
And I thought he looked phenomenal tonight. I really did. Kudos to Brad Pickett. I will say this. John McCarthy was right on top of it, man. He was paying a lot of attention to it and didn't stop the fight. And I think Brad probably showed by the fact that he continued on for two rounds that it was the right call not to stop the fight. But overall, man, just Uriah did what he came to do. I think a first round finish would have probably sent that crowd into a frenzy. But I don't think it was a boring fight by any stretch of imagination. I don't think that they weren't entertained. And of course, you had former basketball great, you know, turned mayor Kevin Johnson, who was, cage side, cheering until the very end. And it was a cool scene, man. You know, maybe he'll come back, but if he never comes back, if this is it, it was a freaking beautiful way to do it at the brand new arena in Sacramento in front of his hometown. It was cool.
Yeah. When he took that back at one point, I was like, oh, we're gonna see that Uriah choke or whatever, you know. The only thing I think that if it seemed to me like it was going to be the last time, I thought I would, even though he mentioned it a little bit, I thought I would have saw more emotion.
I agree.
It looked like he was so okay with it, which maybe he is just okay, you know, really walking away or whatever. But he did mention at one point, thinking in the back when they were playing the little highlight video, he was like, I had to kind of turn away because it was getting him choked up or whatever. And I could see that, but I could see you getting choked up regardless if it was your last fight or even not, you know, just having that play out there for him. But when he's talking, and even during the week when we asked him about it, there was just it just seemed to me like I wasn't getting the emotion that I think I would get if a guy was really walking away from the sport. You know, it seemed to me like it was a walking away for the sport for now kind of thing.
I see what you're saying.
So I don't know if that's a sign of anything. I mean, I'm a pretty good character read a lot of times of guys, and I think you could see if a guy had put as much heart and effort in as he has, I think he would have been broken up a little bit more about finally walking away.
I kind of agree with you, man. I kind of agree with you. Like, I bought it in the pre-fight build-up where it's like, listen, I can't let myself get caught up in this right now. I got a guy that's trying to take my head off. I got all that. And I'm like, all right, I see where you're standing with that. Yeah. You know what I mean? But you're right. He hasn't wanted to get sentimental at all. He hasn't, you know, it's always been about, you know, practical discussion. And even I think, you know, I kind of asked him at the post-fight press conference, you know, like, what happens next? Like, what's the next move? And I really meant, like, what happens tomorrow? What happens Monday? Like, do you go, man, I'm going to, like, eat some ice cream and get fat for a second? And you know what I mean? Like, not worry, you know, and he's just like, well, I'm going to move on to this phase and that business and that. And I think that's the way Uriah thinks. But I kind of see what you're getting at there, man. Like, there was never the sentimentality at all where you're just like, dude, I had to soak it in, and like, you know, man, like, to think about all that I've accomplished and all that I've been through. You're right.
I mean, he reminisced on when people asked him pointedly, like, you know, what are some of your favorite fights?
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, he would tell him, but it was more just reciting from memory. It wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was being brought into this end-all story and that rounded out with, you know, culminating and deciding that it was finally time to just walk away or whatever. It was just, it was kind of flat, you know. And maybe it's just me. Maybe it's my theater degree from The Ohio State University.
Jazz hands.
I got some very nice jazz hands over here. That maybe I just wasn't buying his the role.
No, I agree. I kind of see what you're getting at. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he doesn't fight again, because I don't think he has to fight again.
Yeah.
But it definitely would not, like, if all of a sudden we're like, oh, Uriah's coming out of retirement. You'd be like, yeah, I kind of expected it.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, maybe at the right time, maybe just it's nice to get away from it a little bit. But, I mean, like you said, he's still in top form. He could easily walk away from the sport from a year, stay in shape, and still be in the top 10, top 15 level probably. So
100%. All right, well, he spoke to the media, a lot of local media as well as us, the traveling national media, for about 20 minutes. So if you want to see that whole thing, check out the MMA Junkie YouTube page. We got the full discussion up there. And as we said, it was kind of funny because a lot of the local media, after he left, they pretty much bounced.
They did.
Yeah, Mickey Gall didn't get to speak to the local media. Michelle Watterson did not get to speak to the local media. Uriah had come and gone, and that was that. The main card kicked off with Alan Chauvin picking up a decision win over Mike Perry. Alan, I thought, just fought a brilliant fight, man. Very technical, very disciplined, stuck to his game plan. He knew what he was dealing with Mike Perry, a guy that had a ton of power, a guy that if you stand in front of and you brawl with, it's probably going to make you wish you hadn't done that. And, man, this fight, we talked to both guys earlier in the week. Hopefully everybody got a chance to check out those interviews. Alan, again, a guy that I've known since, he was in the amateur career, and it's been fun watching him kind of grow up through the ranks. Meanwhile, Mike Perry, platinum Mike Perry, I dig his intensity, man. He's a different dude.
Yeah.
He's a different dude. But overall, I thought this was just a fantastic performance by Alan Chauvin. And I think this will be, maybe one of those lesson learning type fights for Mike Perry.
Certainly, it certainly can. But he's the kind of guy that I think he really believes what he says. And this is the guy that's like, I don't need to make friends. I'm here to win. I'm here to move up the ranks and become whatever. And I think he's kind of guy that he needs to have a little hatred against his opponent. We've seen guys that don't need that, and we've definitely seen some that do. And I think he falls in that category where he needs to kind of have a little animosity, kind of keep him moving forward. I'm not sure if that's from where he's from, being a lot of fights that,
I think so.
That's the sort of thing that just kept him going then and got him into fighting in the first place. And, but, yeah, I certainly hope so. I think if anything else, he'll realize that, there's, because I think he discounted a lot of things about Chauvin. He wasn't even – didn't think he had the power, didn't think he had the striking, thought he was just going to pretty much run through him. And he did make contact.
He touched him up a couple of times.
He certainly did. He certainly did. But Alan also weathered a couple of them. Where I think that probably, maybe got Mike thinking a little bit coming in. But he tagged Mike a couple times that really kind of sent him straight, and then he kind of slowed down. And I think it surprised him because I think that doubt crept into him a little bit, and that eventually played in Alan's favor. But I think it could be definitely a good learning experience. But, I mean, the dude's a stud. I mean, he's got a lot of power. He's got a lot of talent. I think if anything else, I would love to see, him be more cordial to some of the other guys. Even guys, we're hearing stories that even other fighters that he wasn't even fighting against, he was finding ways to just kind of have beef with them during the week. And I'm just like, it's good if that's what you need to get yourself amped up against your opponent. But, do you just not want to be friends with anybody?
Well, I think him and obviously his boy Alex Nicholson as well. I enjoy talking to them just because it's interesting to kind of pick them apart a little bit and kind of try to learn what's inside their head. But you're right. It's kind of funny because, Mike Perry came out at the beginning of that fight and he bows to all four corners, like a martial artist, and I don't mean to say this in a rude way because he is a martial artist. Obviously he trains and he knows what he's doing, but, he's just a fighter. There's some people that are athletes. There's some people that are fighters.
Yeah.
that's a dude I wouldn't want to run into on the street. You know what I'm saying? Like, he, you know, he's not – I think of him as more of a brawler, a fighter than a sportsman or whatever. And it is weird. I mean, and I guess it's well, as you said, I mean, we have heard some stories that this week here in Sacramento, you know, there were some other fighters on the card that were like, who's this dude punking me when I'm not even fighting him or whatever?
Yeah.
But Alan, when he came back and talked to you guys in the back after the win – he was pretty fired up, right? Like, he was like, I don't like this guy.
Well, and I mean, he did say that it was squashed, it's done, or at least in his mind, like, it's done after the fact. But he felt very, very disrespected, and he was a little frustrated that he didn't get a chance to sort of say that on a bigger, you know, avenue than just us reporters in
Bro,
the back or
MMA
whatever.
Junkie, what are you talking about?
I mean, right?
Sure, you could have said it on Fox, but, bro, it's going to be on MMA Junkie's YouTube channel.
I think especially with him, I mean, like, especially when Mike took it so far, I mean, he put it out there on the Twitter, and you're throwing it out over the webs. So it's like, all right, you put it out in front of this huge audience, and now I want to have my piece to say my part in a huge audience, and then they didn't give him that chance. So he's like, well, fuck, I just want to say something. So, I mean, because he was saying in the back, you know, he had told himself his kid, I even asked him, like, Dad, why did you try to kick that man or whatever? And he said about, hey, you know, well,
at the weigh-ins. Yeah.
He's like, you know, well, he's a bully, and you can't let bullies win. You know, where I thought in one aspect he would say, I kind of lost my cool. Sorry, you know, sorry, son or daughter. I can't remember if he said it was son or daughter or whatever. But
no, he's got a little boy.
You know, instead of saying I kind of lost my cool, it was just like it was about, you know, this guy's a bully. I don't like bullies, and this is what you do to bullies. You take care of bullies. And he was kind of hoping that he would, if anything, learn from that to be more modest and humble and respectful of the other martial artists that are around you or whatever.
Wow.
But he said it was done, and I meant to ask Alan about it, but we had already kind of run a little bit long. He did, though, when they came sort of together at the end, they were done. It was the slightest and smallest of little bows, but Mike did bow towards him.
I didn't catch that.
You know,
wow.
At the very end, Alan, you know, you'll see his hands go to the side, and he does the little head nod, so they bowed back a little bit. And I think in his book, that was enough. He's done. Like, the fight's done. I think, you know, same thing with at the end of Benavidez and Cejudo. Once they were finally done, like, after all this shit, we're done. I don't have to see you. You don't have to see me. Let's walk away. So I think he's glad that that's over. But he did say that, you know, it's fine. I mean, I don't think he's going to look up Mike to hang out anytime soon. But I don't see anything more, at least coming from Alan's side, chirping back. Now, after watching the interview today and some of the stuff that he said, Mike might feel like continuing to chirp a little bit because he might not like the fact that, you know, Alan went on there and said that he thought he was being disrespectful and blah, blah, blah. But who knows? But it was great. So, yeah, it's a good interview. We put the full interview up there online so people can do it. And then I cut down another one of just a couple other little stuff. But he was very animated, and he was, you know, and the thing that was nice, too, and I guess he was frustrated because he feels like he's done enough that he should be getting these top 15, top 10 dudes, you know. He's got a little string, you know, running together. And so we got him to kind of chirp a little bit. And it was funny because he was trying to talk about, you know, I definitely want a guy in, like, the top 10, top 15, whatever. Or, you know, here you got Sage, you got Mickey. These guys are co-headlining this card. He's like, I'll take that winner. You know, I'll take whoever. You know, like, if that's what it takes, you know, he's like, I don't like the fact that I got to – talk more to do whatever,
right.
But you know, if that's what works or whatever, you know, I think he pretty much alluded to the fact that he's not gonna take it to the degree of like what Mike did or do whatever and
right.
become disrespectful just for the sake of to get a noticed and to get a fight because he believes he's a veteran and that's below what he's trying to do. He's a martial artist and I think he
sure.
buys into the
I think he does
the respect
too.
And the honesty and the you know and being respectful and all that other kind of stuff that he doesn't want to go down that path, but he's also realizes that you got to start chirping, you know, the squeaky wheel will get that grease or whatever. So it should be interesting to see if he steps up his game and starts really speaking out about it. But that was another thing he was hoping to say on the mic too. So They would have got a mouthful, though, if they would have put him on. But it was kind of nice because he was like, all right, well, they didn't give me a chance. So here, I'm just going to give it all to you guys. So here you go.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, check back on that interview. Look
MMA
online.
Junkie YouTube, you can check that out. We'll have the cut down on MMA Junkie as well. So, yeah, check it all out because it was kind of fun to watch some of that unfold. And I am interested to see where Mike Perry goes from here. You know what I mean? His first loss, we'll see what he does. All right, just kind of run through the prelims real quick. Paul Craig did pick up a submission win over Henrique da Silva, Frankenstein.
Dude's a teacher.
Yeah, Paul Craig's a teacher. I did not know that.
And you know what's interesting? The one thing I took away from that at the end, when he wants to, of course, all of them want to be champions. They all want to win. And I asked him, I said, if you start winning, you get everything you want. I was like, will you walk away from being a teacher? Do you not want to walk in? He said, I'll always be a teacher. He's like, I'm a teacher first and foremost. He's like, I wake up every day and I feel so happy and glad that I can go in there and change these lives and like
That's
do
awesome.
It. And I'm just like, wow. I'm like, and it's funny because I was like, I bet your students are pretty like intimidated. They stay in line. He's like, no, half the time they don't care about that stuff. they'd rather take a selfie with me and think we're best buds or whatever. And they're like, somebody's like, you got to give me a shout out. And he's like, I can't give all you guys shout outs or whatever. He's like, or I'd be like reading the class roster up here or something. But he had a great sense of humor. And it's funny because at first I didn't understand. It took me a second to really kind of get the accent down.
Cut through the Scottish accent.
But after that, then it was like, it was fine. Once you don't fight it and try to, not pay attention to it, it just kind of, it's easy. You can understand it. But I thought that was just amazing that even if he can get it to the point where he's fighting full time and doesn't have to teach, he wants to keep teaching. So I think that's pretty I just think that's wonderful for him to want to do that. So kudos to him.
The Scottish accent's tough, man.
It is.
Robert Whiteford, I have trouble understanding him. And God bless if you're at the pub. And you're hanging out with a couple of Scottish blokes that have had a few cocktails because it gets really, really tough there. That's cool. All right. Mizuto Hirota picked up a unanimous decision win over Cole Miller. We talked about it going in. I didn't talk to Cole Miller this week. I wanted to talk to him afterwards just to kind of see where his head was at. And to be honest, I thought this was a fight that he could win and a fight that I kind of, hoped he would win in a lot of ways, just knowing kind of the pain and the emotion that he's going through. But just looked flat, to be honest with you. I mean, that interview that he did with Dave Mandel, where he admitted that he didn't want to be at practice, he was struggling to maintain focus, wasn't sure how he felt about fighting. Tonight he looked like a person that felt all that way. I was hoping he could put all that aside and maybe he turned into like a motivation or something like that, but just looked flat. It was kind of bummed for him.
Yeah. I only got to watch a little bit of that fight, but when I did, it wasn't going Cole's way. So, yeah, I felt real bad for him. But you're right. The one day we saw him, I don't think that it wasn't looking like he was having a hard weight issue, even though I'm sure, it's always tough to
cut. Yeah, I bet that's never a good cut for him.
Yeah, but yeah, for the parts that I saw, he was definitely kind of not having his way.
Yeah, he told us, like you said, when we ran into him, he told us he had his head straight and he told us he was in the right place, but he just didn't look great tonight.
Yeah, and I think off nights just happen, and it might not have been anything with his head or whatever. Sometimes, I think you can go in there with the best intentions and shit just doesn't click. So it just could be as simple as that, just things just didn't work for him, but...
Rough night,
but he'll be back, I hope, but who knows.
I do too. Colby Covington picked up a decision win over Brian Barberina. Colby Covington dominated this fight in terms of wrestling. Colby's a guy that we spent a lot of time talking to over the years and watched him develop. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a wrestler, and he wants to continue to develop as a martial artist, and he did show some good striking at times. Did get some boos along the way as well. There were just so many takedowns. It was such a heavy takedown-oriented offense. Brian Barberina, of course, we spent a little bit of time hanging out with him at the airport on the way here, and then we talked to him earlier in the week, and he was coming off a long layoff and looking for a big win. But Colby Covington just dominated here, and then actually told me as he walked by press row that he had actually torn his MCL about 4 weeks ago and has not been able to practice for 4 weeks. Was getting PRP, I believe, the platelet-rich, you know what I'm talking about. Getting that treatment.
Very technical.
Getting that done. So he's really just, you know, been recovering and didn't want to pull out of the fight or anything like that, which is interesting because the one fight he lost to Warley Alves, he entered that fight with an injury as well and then swore that he was never going to enter a fight with an injury again and then entered the damn fight with the injury anyway. But he won, dominated. Told you guys that he wasn't really happy about it, right? That he wasn't necessarily thrilled with this performance,
yeah,
even as dominant as it was.
Yeah, I wasn't thrilled with his performance. And I always respect that when guys do it. I think Derek went a little bit overboard last time, and he wasn't.
Shit.
I think sometimes when he goes that bad, I'm like, bro, you're going to talk yourself out of a fight, man.
Yeah, right? Like, but, don't trash yourself.
But it's always good when the guys, you know, are able to realize it. You know, I mean, they go in there, they train for the knockout. I guarantee none of them go in there, work their butts off that hard, and train for a decision.
Right.
So, yeah, he was just venting some frustration. He wanted it, really thought he had the skills capable of doing it, and just wasn't able to put it together, you know. But, yeah, he was voicing his frustration but still, you know, and here we are as media sometimes, right? I'm like, but, you know, there's got to be some good. Like, feel like, you know, we're acting like therapists. Like, come on, bro. You know you did some good, though, right? You know. But, you know, I think it's great. I commend the guys when they go in there and, you know, are already ready to – they could be like, oh, well, I still won. I'm the best. But to come back and say, you know, shit didn't – I didn't do what I was supposed to do here. I did do what I was supposed to do here. You know, let me go back to the drawing board and figure out what's going on. Because, you know, that's a point of growth at that point, you know. So I'm sure we'll be back and, kicking some more ass here soon.
No doubt. All right, Alex Morono picked up a decision win over James Mutazri. James Mutazri was winning this fight early, looked good, and then just faded. And Alex Morono, to his credit, was gritty, was hardworking, got in there, you know, and just outworked him over the final 10 minutes. If you were watching the live and official weigh-in stream on Friday, you remember that James Mutazri was the one that struggled to make weight. We sat there and watched him. You know, we could see into the fighter locker room area a little bit, and you could see that he was kind of hanging his head, apparently was ready to just give up and say to hell with it. I'll take whatever weight I get. I'll give the 20%. And his coaches were basically like, no, get your ass back in there. Lose the rest of the weight. He did lose the rest of the weight. He made weight, but just faded. And I don't want to take anything away from Alex Morono, man. He was gritty. He was the guy was focused and determined. But Mutazri is one of these guys that is so flashy and so, you know, capable of great stuff. And I think he's just, you know, coming in kind of out of shape or not necessarily out of shape, but not on weight and having that extra tough weight cut, I think it really cost him over time. Josh Emmett picked up a decision win over Scott Holtzman, excuse me. Hard-fought fight here, too, man. These two dudes went at it. I thought this was a fight of the night candidate, to be honest with you. The one that did win it, of course, was Leslie Smith versus Serena Aldana, which we'll talk about in a minute. But hard fight here between these two dudes. They went at it back and forth. Emmett, man, this dude, a Team Alpha Male product. He definitely had the crowd on his side. This guy has been in a couple of wild fights, man. Just two fights into his UFC career. Of course, he picked up the win over John Tuck in Rotterdam earlier this year, where he broke his hand to kind of hang on for dear life. Here, he was gassed, man. There was no doubt about it. He was gassed. Scott Holtzman was putting the pressure on him, and Emmett found a way to get a couple of key takedowns and to strike at the right times and picked up a big, big win. This was a fun fight, man. It really was. And, of course, we, again, spent some time with Scott Holtzman at the airport the other day, setting first class with Mr. Hot Sauce because, you know, the MMA Roadshow rolls first class, you know, on short flights where we get upgraded. I thought this was a fun fight for both guys. Really did. And, of course, the Fox prelims kicked off with Leslie Smith picking up a decision win over Rene Aldana. This fight was fun. It did get the fight of the night. Aldana worked her jab. I mean, just her foot movement on point like she always does. But Leslie Smith, God bless her, if she didn't just bite down on her mouthpiece and just move forward and just throw from start to finish. I mean, the pace that she maintained from minute 1 to minute 15, never being afraid to walk through a strike, to give a strike, just ballsy stuff, man. I mean, yeah. Can you say ballsy stuff for a women's fight?
Of course you can.
All right, cool. I'm assuming that was sexist somehow.
But she was in the back talking about like feminism and stuff, and she kept saying like blossoming her, and she's like, after a while, she starts just laughing, and she's like, that sounds like so anti like of like what you would think of like equal rights and whatever. It sounds so girly, and she's like, these people just blossoming, and then she'd start chuckling about it or whatever in the back. She's a fucking character. But dude, she got in like Terminator mode at one point. I think I even said that the back, because like you said, she was willing to go through that punch, but she just came forward and was just like jab, 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 like a fucking just machine coming forward. And dude, she rocked Aldana, and I thought it was gonna be over like quick, but then Aldana showed a lot of heart. And then to come back and do what she did, it's like after the cobwebs cleared, and then she got back and remembered, like, oh yeah, I'm pretty badass. Like, let me come at you now, you know. And she rocked Leslie sometimes, and it was great. That was a very, very exciting fight. I remember both sides of the press room were just kind of like, there were some people on the other side that were still eating or hanging out and kind of, you know, milling about. But once that fight started going, everybody just kind of stopped. We're just like watching in place, you know. So that was really cool. Anytime a fight kind of causes everybody to kind of just stop what you're doing, because I mean, you know, a lot of times we got interviews and other stuff going. We're just trying to chug through the stuff, and to kind of get to one of those points where you're like, all right, this is just wrong for me to miss this as this is happening, because this is that good. And this is one of those fights where that happened tonight, where everybody just kind of said, all right, I got to watch this. This is good.
It was, dude, it felt that way inside the building as well. People were, you know, still kind of filling up a little bit. You know, people are kind of milling about a little.
Yeah.
And it felt like everybody just, it got their attention. It was like, oh, shit, the fight card's on now. And you know what, man? I've made it known before, I love watching Aldana fight, and I still do. Uh-huh. I think, man, her, as you said, man, she is a badass, and she got rocked early on, but she's got that technical striking that's so fun to watch. But Leslie is just tough as nails, man. And I thought it was cool that they got the fight of the night, even though I did feel that Emmett and Holtzman were candidates as well. I thought it was cool because, you know, there was a lot of rumblings after Toronto where Cowboy didn't get a bonus. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, was that politically motivated because he's kind of involved in this fighter union type talk? Leslie's been right at the forefront. Now, granted, part of a different organization, she's since backed away from that organization. You know, she was in support of the PFA. Then she kind of has said that she's no longer necessarily in support of the PFA. But she has been very vocal about union talk. Yeah.
She's like, even she mentioned another one that you would crack up. Because it just made me think about how many MMAAA, whatever organization. She's also part of a MMAFA.
That's right. That's right.
You know, as well as like another one. So even though maybe if the PFA isn't really her main thing or whatever, and they have some slight differences, she is so adamant about really making a change. And she's thought about it, and you could tell she's passionate about it, because when somebody's passionate about it, you know, they just flow, and you kind of get caught up in all the good stuff that they're saying. And there was a point when she was going on in the back, and I was just like, wow, she really is passionate about this stuff. And I did a cut down on the interview, but I also put the full interview up on our YouTube page. So if you want to listen to what Leslie says about all the union talks and all this other stuff, it's there on the YouTube. And it was pretty extensive. Actually, the bulk of like the interview was most of that stuff. She actually even thanked Morocco for asking about sort of like an update on the union stuff. She's like, well, thank you very much for asking about that question. And just like, she was just ready to open the faucet and just spew the stuff that she hadn't had a chance to talk about for a while. So, it's great. I mean, one, I thought she put on a great performance.
Is that the first person to ever thank Stephen Morocco for a question?
Has to be. Has to be. has to be.
Poor Magnificent One.
But yeah, no, it was good. It was good to hear things. But yeah, I mean, literally, there's probably about 5 minutes of conversation just speaking as to the unions and her thoughts on why things should be different, how they could be better, you know, and a little bit on the difference of some of the organizations out there. She actually talks a little bit about the PFA and what went on there, but also talked a little bit about the MMAAA. And then she talked about these other groups, and I was just like, my Lord, how many groups are you part of? but good for her. I mean, she believes in it. She knows that there's something that needs to be changed, and she's taking it on full head on, and she's becoming very educated about it. And that's why I think she's able to talk so well about it and so passionate about it.
She studies it.
You know, she's been studying and reading on it. I mean, so good for her. Same thing I thought with, like, Tim Kennedy, like, some people just get it, and they understand the ideas, and they understand the issues, and then they become well-versed in it, and then they become the perfect spokesperson for it, and she is definitely becoming one of those perfect spokespersons.
We're going to see it. You know what, man? It's going to happen. Something's going to happen. There's going to be some type – and it may not be this year. It may be next year.
Be some year.
It's going to happen. We're going to see it, and these people are going to be the forefront of it. All right, the Fight Pass prelims. Eddie Wineland picked up a TKO win over Tagay Mizugaki. Old school WEC fight here in Sacramento. Mizugaki looked good early on, to be honest with you, man. I thought he was actually outboxing Eddie Wineland, but once Eddie Wineland landed, it was lights out for Mizugaki. I saw some people complaining about the stoppage. I really had no problem with the stoppage here. Mizugaki was getting dropped. He was in trouble. It was not going very well for him, to be honest with you. And I was fine with the stoppage. And at this point, I'm not saying that Mizugaki needs to walk away, but he needs to take some time off. I think, man, his chin is gone, man. He's taking some rough losses. And again, I thought he looked good here, man. I thought he was outstriking Eddie Wineland on the feet, and then one good shot put him down. And you know, you think it was 4 months ago where he got his lights out by Cody Garbrandt. So. Rough little stretch from Mizugaki.
And Cruz has knocked him out.
Yeah,
he's taken some knockouts. I mean, and maybe it's time for some Bellator action or something.
I know. I never want to be the guy. He's 33 years old. He just turned 33. I never want to tell somebody to walk away, but some rough losses, man. Some really rough losses. Hector Sandoval picked up a fantastic win over Freddie Serrano, man. I thought Sandoval looked great.
Yeah.
Of course, we talked to Kid Alex earlier this week at Ultimate Fitness. It was awesome. We were at the gym, at Uriah Faber's gym, Ultimate Fitness, Team Alpha Male, and we had no idea that Hector was going to be there. And he kind of just walked up on us and started talking to us. We're like, well, shit, as long as you're here, let's just grab a few minutes on camera.
Yep.
And glad we did, because this was a phenomenal performance, man. He out-wrestled Freddie Serrano. He looked good on the feet. You know, maybe trailed off a little bit at the end, but overall, man, I thought this was just a scintillating performance, man. I thought it looked really good.
Yeah, he was fun to watch, and it's funny because how he talks and gets very amped, and he speaks very, very quickly. And
he does.
Just like his fight style. I mean, he came out amped up and really charging in there. I thought both of them looked like they were ready to just go at it 110% right from the get-go. But yeah, that was a fun fight. And Hector, I mean, it's funny because he reminds me of he's like one of these fighters that now he's just starting to get the media. So he was a little bit more nervous at the beginning of when he was talking, little quick answers. But then as we kind of loosened him up a little bit, his answers got longer and longer. He got more comfortable with us, like, you know, like, we're not going to throw you under the bus. You can say whatever. So it was fun to see that happen as well. And it's kind of neat to see, like, a fighter developing in some of those aspects right in front of you and stuff, because he's definitely got the fighting skills and he's getting that on point. So, it was a good fight, you know, and anybody that goes out of their way that, you know, during fight week, and we thought it was neat that he was there at the gym, because better than hanging out at his house doing nothing or whatever. Anybody that's going to give us some extra time of the day to do stuff, slightly biased, I'm like, I want you to do well, too.
Right.
And he did. So good for him, you know. We got to – so we'll just say that since he came and gave us an extra interview, that was the reason why he won. So any other fighter wants to come give us some extra interviews, time.
You come seek out the MMA Roadshow.
We will almost guarantee your win. Almost. We're almost
those
maybe.
Were strong.
I know. Almost maybe slightly, possibly guarantee you.
All right, first fight of the night, Sultan Aliyev defeated Bojan Velikovic, or Boyan. I think I can't remember how to say it.
Bohan? I think it was Bohan.
Boyan? I don't know. Mike Goldberg says shit like 10 different ways so I don't.
Don't trust a fucking thing he says.
I love Goldie, but man, he gets stuff wrong.
I'm like, all right, how did, I was like, how was fucking Stan saying that? I thought he said like Bohan, but maybe he did say Bojan or whatever, but. In the back, I was asking, I was like, is it Bohan or what? Or is it Bojan, whatever. I settled on it being Bohan, but maybe I'm fucking wrong or whatever. But.
Well, Sultan Aliyev picked up the win anyway. Yeah. This was not a great fight. It was not a great way to start the night. But it was a big win for Sultan. He had some time off, and he picked up the victory. And things picked up greatly after that. So it wasn't the greatest start of the night, but
that's
it ended
true.
Up being a lot of fun.
We heard that he had shaved his chest right before he walked out, and by the time he got to the ring, it was fully matted like that again.
He is one hairy.
He's a hairy dude.
Hairy gentleman.
What's funny, like, as twisted, you know, it's the first fight of the night, and I'm just fucking bored, I guess, already was just, like, something to just wake me up and get me into this. I'm thinking, like, when they go down on the ground, is fucking Bohan going to have, like, fucking rug rash or, like, burns from his fucking chest hairs? Because I'm thinking, like, we're thinking, like, dude, he's going to cut him with that shit. He's going to have scratches
like
going
some,
across or whatever.
Like a Brillo pad or
like
something?
Like a Brillo pad. Like, it's a secret weapon. He just grows it, and it's, like, titanium strength hairs or something. I don't know. But we're having some fun at his expense or whatever, but good dude, man. He's a fucking beast, man. But good for him.
You guys have your little crew in the back, dude, right? It's you.
We gotta keep.
You got you.
I mean, we keep ourselves entertained.
Casey from MMA Fighting.
Yeah,
Dave Mandel for Sure Dog.
Fang Dizzle's back
Heidi
there.
Heidi Fang from the Las Vegas Review Journal. They've started to pick up their traveling,
yeah.
And then other than that, it was pretty much just you guys shooting, right?
That was pretty much us. There was a couple of local guys that came in and out. Of course, some of the Faber teammates or some of the Sacramento people came in.
They weren't throwing down on the Mizuto Hirota scrum?
No, not so much. Not so much. But it happens. But, yeah, it's funny. We have our group back there that it we take care of each other. we have some fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
We have some fun.
All right, well, listen, it's getting late. We got to do a little bit of editing. I've got to down some award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbons before we fly home tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Next week is Christmas, but we're going to put together a show. We'll figure out something. I'm not sure how we'll do it yet, but if everything goes well, we'll have our conversation with Dana White on Tuesday, so that could certainly provide us with some material to talk about. Of course, there is the possibility of all coffee, no cream.
There's always a possibility. Doesn't mean it'll happen.
Cold coffee's not down for that whatsoever.
I mean, I'm just trying to say, people, the poor bastard that think that's a good idea, I'm just trying to save you from that. I'm trying to save you. Because right now you're getting me in small little bits. You don't want me for too long. Or it'll be like the shortest show in history. I'm like, hey, guys, welcome to the show. It was great having you. I'll talk to you soon.
15
Thanks for
minutes.
Coming.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for listening.
All right.
I have to come up with my own little catchphrase to leave. You know, thanks for
deuces.
Deuces, dudes. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll figure something out. It's Christmas. We're not gonna break the streak though. We're gonna make something happen. And then after that, of course, it'll be UFC 207. And then we get shit started for 2017. Get this bad boy going all over
Crazy.
Again.
2017.
Nuts, right? Nuts, right? All right. Well, listen. Hear me sniffling. It is so cold in here. It's looking California, but feeling Minnesota out there.
Well, I think
man.
It's just being tired.
Yeah.
Some sleep. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should wrap this up and get some sleep.
All right, then. Well, let me just say, thanks for listening.